906.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. If you're a person who likes nail biters, you would have loved last night's Iowa caucuses. A too close to call race lasted into the morning, and in the end, Mitt Romney eked out 8 more votes than Rick Santorum, with Ron Paul coming in a healthy third.
But congratulations to Rick Santorum. This has been a great victory for him and for his effort. He's worked very hard in Iowa. We also feel it's been a great victory for us here, for Ron Paul as well. Ron Paul's had a great night.
But before the confetti could be swept up, some candidates were on planes for their next stop. Most headed to New Hampshire with heavy schedules today in the Granite State. Two exceptions, Rick Perry went home to Texas, and Michelle Bachmann has canceled her trip to South Carolina and plans a news conference in Des Moines at 11 Eastern time. Rick Santorum's rise in Iowa only happened in the last few weeks of the campaign, and so a key question now is, can this Santorum surge be repeated elsewhere, especially in a state like New Hampshire, where religion matters less? Meanwhile, after a disappointing fourth place in Iowa, Newt Gingrich sounded like a man going into battle, as he promises this week to draw sharp distinctions between himself and Romney. And then there's John Huntsman, who's held far more events here than any other major candidate, and still hoping his Granite State grassroots campaign makes him the surprise coming out of our primary next Tuesday. Today in The Exchange, examining Iowa's results and how they may affect contests in New Hampshire and beyond. Let's hear from you, too. If you're Republican or independent planning to vote on Tuesday, what's your reaction to the Iowa results? How much do they shape your thinking about these candidates? And if you're still undecided, what do you want to hear from these contenders over the next 6 days that will help you make up your mind? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. We have two guests for the hour. Wayne Lesperance is in studio, professor of political science at New England College, director of the Center for Civic Engagement there. And Wayne, nice to see you. Thanks
Good
for
morning,
being here.
Laura.
And joining us from Iowa, Jonathan Aull, news director at Iowa Public Radio. Jonathan, I know it was a late night. I really appreciate you coming in.
Oh, my pleasure. It was. We were up until about 3.
Wow. Well, what's your reaction, Jonathan, to this three-way split, to how close it was, to how late it was?
Well, I think that you know, a lot of the headlines and a lot of the things that you're going to hear are really going to focus on those 8 votes that separated Rick Santorum and Mitt Romney. However, I think there's a more relevant point on how close this really was. And that was, in the history of the Iowa caucuses, on the Republican side, there has never been a caucus where you had 3 people over 20%. And if you include the Democrats, that's only happened twice on the Democratic side where you had 3 people who were over 20%. In 2008, when Obama, Edwards, and Clinton all got more than that. And then in 88, when Gephardt, Paul Simon, Michael Dukakis all had over 20%. So I think how close it was. Again, everyone's going to focus on those 8 votes, but the fact that you had 3 people who were all over 20%, that is unusual, and I think that it sets the stage for what's next. You know, Iowa, and I don't know how you guys feel in New Hampshire, but Iowa, we know that we're not the kingmaker, but we flush out the pretenders, and I think that's probably what you've seen with that big difference between where the top 3 were and then the rest were. I think clearly Michelle Bachmann scheduled an announcement she's going to withdraw. Rick Perry pretty much all but said he was going to withdraw when he talked to supporters last night. Gingrich says he's going to stay and fight, but I can't see how long that's going to last. So I think we're essentially down to a 3-person race.
Wow, what do you make of this 3-way split, Wayne? Been described as a moderate, an evangelical, and a libertarian.
It really does sort of reflect sort of 3 very different pieces of the Republican Party. Even the process of how the caucus went in terms of how they ran, there's an interesting contrast. Santorum spent a tremendous amount of time in Iowa, hit all of the 99 counties. Romney spent very little time by comparison in Iowa, and yet they both battled for those final 8 votes into 2:30 this morning. So, you know, the story is that Iowa typically punches three tickets coming out, and so there are three that are very close coming out of Iowa. They have very different campaigns on the ground in New Hampshire. Beyond New Hampshire, one of the criticisms Ron Paul raised was that Santorum's ability to develop a national organization to be competitive in places like South Carolina, which where he hasn't been since very early November, or Florida, is a question there. So there's a lot of scrambling going on now to figure out what are the next steps. You add to that that, at least as of the most recent polls out of the University of New Hampshire, Romney has a pretty sizable lead here in New Hampshire. So this story still has yet to be finalized, and obviously we're just getting started, but we have a very interesting beginning to our primary season.
Well, and we'll talk about everybody, of course, this hour, but I'm interested in what you said, Wayne. We have three different campaigns from these top three finishers coming into New Hampshire. Give us a little more on that.
Sure. So Romney has been basically campaigning here since the 2008 election, and he's had a presence. He has a home in Wolfboro. So he's had a very robust presence here. Ron Paul has a very different kind of an organization, very popular with young people, very active, very energetic. I'm sure they saw a lot of that in Iowa, some good organization. Santorum has been running on a shoestring budget since day one. The person running his national campaign, Mike Biondo, is a New Hampshire guy. He knows the ground here. They have lived well off the land. And this success is sure to bring them in money, more expertise. So how they use that, how they actually leverage that new those new resources remains to be seen. So there's three very different kinds of campaigns being run that represent three different points of view out there.
You know, I wanted to ask about Ron Paul and follow up with you, Jonathan. It was interesting to me that the oldest gentleman in the campaign by far, 76 years old, Ron Paul attracted scores of young people, including first-time caucus goers. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I think if you look at what Ron Paul stands for, what's unique about him is that it doesn't matter what your political background is. If you're a conservative, a liberal, an anarchist, a Tea Party person, it doesn't matter. I guarantee you there's something in Ron Paul's platform that you love and there's something that you hate, because it's such a unique set of views that it really defies descriptions. So I think that when you looked at the kind of people that came to and caucused for Ron Paul, you ended up, and everybody focuses on the young people, but there's also a huge number of military veterans that showed up for Ron Paul. There's a lot of people who identified with the Green Party that see a lot of what they want to see in Ron Paul. So I think that, yes, young people, college rallies, that was a popular photo op and a popular thing to say. But there were also a lot of other kinds of people that he brought together such a different group. And the exit polling showed that Ron Paul easily won among first-time caucus goers in Iowa. So he was bringing new people into the tent that normally probably wouldn't have caucused if not for his presence. And I think that does include college students, and I think it does include a lot of people with different ideologies than you might typically see.
You know, it's hard for me to gauge, Wayne, how much Ron Paul is in this to get his ideas out there and how much he really wants to win the presidency. When we interviewed him a couple months ago, he kind of equivocated on that question. It seemed to be, well, yeah, it'd be nice to be president, but I'm really excited about my ideas. Right. But then last night in Iowa, he said, what better way to get your ideas out there than to be president?
You know, and it's one of those rare moments in politics where someone gives a really honest answer, right? In that, you know, I think Ron Paul's view on his chances have sort of evolved over time. I think he very much wants to talk about the Federal Reserve. That's what he loves to talk about. And those Austrians, boy, he's all about the Austrians.
And the wars.
And it's an attractive message to a lot of folks. But I think for early on, at least, it's very much about getting this point out there, because nobody else in the Republican Party is talking about these things. And that's why he is popular with lots of these other groups. The one constant are, if you are for business as usual, if this is the argument the Paul folks would make, then Ron Paul's not your guy. But if you really want to radically change how things are being done in Washington, this is your candidate. And so that appeals to lots of very different kinds of folks. We had a Occupy Wall Street group at an event we're doing here in Concord, and it was amazing to me how many of those folks really like Ron Paul. They don't like, you know, the fact that he's a Republican. They don't like some of the other things that he stands for, but they thought, you know, there's a guy who really wants to change things. And so that's Ron Paul's appeal. I saw in a recent interview he did where he sort of, they asked him, do you dream about, you know, waking up in the Oval, in the... in the White House and all of that. And he said, not really. And it was just sort of this dismissive. I thought, that's just honest. And I think that also appeals to a lot of folks.
Well, our phone number,
you know, and
yeah.
Another thing that Ron Paul said when he addressed supporters last night is he said, you know, we're talking about our issues here. And there was a recent national poll asking people about how they felt about the gold standard. He said, you know, a year ago, there never would have been a national poll asking people how they feel about the gold standard.
Right.
And you could tell that he was claiming victory right there. That yes, I think he is in this for the long haul. Is he in it for ideology, or is he in it because he thinks he can win and wants to be the president? That's difficult to say. But the look on his face and the way that he beamed when he talked about how excited he was that there was actually a national poll asking people about the gold standard, you could tell he thought, aha, we got it.
Our phone number here in the exchange for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Join us as we look at what happened in Iowa last night, how it may affect the contest coming here in New Hampshire with our first in the nation primary on Tuesday. If you're planning to vote in that primary, first of all, what's your reaction to the results out of Iowa? Do they shape your thinking about these candidates or not? And if you're still undecided, what do you want to hear from these contenders over the next 6 days that might help you make up your mind? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or email exchange@nhpr.org. You know, one lesson that Rick Santorum's success shows us, perhaps, Wayne, is that money isn't everything, at least in Iowa, right?
Right. Well, and hopefully New Hampshire. I mean, I think what Iowa and New Hampshire have in common is what we say is that this is still a place where shoe leather counts as much as anything else. Going out, meeting the people in the house parties at the local diner, little pizza shops. That counts quite a bit. And so, you know, lots of money was spent by groups in support of Mitt Romney to go after Newt Gingrich, and we heard a lot about that from Newt last night. But what Rick Santorum showed was that, you know, the old way of go to all the counties, visiting with as many people as you can possibly visit with, still can pay off.
Well, you can't do that in Florida, though.
No. And this is where, you know, the primary process will change. You can do some of that in South Carolina. But once you get beyond that, this system is going to change very, very dramatically.
Okay, a couple more questions for both of you gentlemen about the role of money, both in Iowa and New Hampshire and beyond. And we'll take your calls after a short break. So join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or email exchange@nhpr.org.
Good morning, it's 9:19. You're listening to The Exchange here on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our members, from the NEEF Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. And from the Melanson Company of Keene and Bow with comprehensive roofing solutions since 1932, adding solar to turn roofs into energy-producing assets. Information at melanson.com. Hampshire weather for today, increasing clouds and cold in the north country with highs near 15 degrees. Not a whole lot warmer in the south, with temperatures only getting to about 25. For tonight, a chance of evening snow showers or flurries, otherwise mostly cloudy in the north country, lows near 5 degrees. Chilly as well in the south, with lows there in the 20s. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're recapping Iowa's first-in-the-nation caucuses and looking ahead to New Hampshire's first-in-the-nation primaries. Let's hear from you if you're planning to vote on Tuesday in the Republican presidential primary. What do you make of the results out of Iowa? Do they affect how you might vote on Tuesday? And given that the candidates will be all over the state over the next 6 days, there are two debates in New Hampshire this weekend. What more do you want to hear from them that might help you make your decision? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Jonathan Aul, just before the break, we were talking about, you know, one supposed lesson out of Iowa is that it isn't just about money. Rick Santorum didn't have a lot, and he still came in very, very, very close to tying with Mitt Romney. But then there's the other side of this money question, Jonathan. Several analysts are saying another winner out of Iowa is super PACs. What are these, and why do some people say they also won in Iowa?
Well, with the new Supreme Court ruling about removing a lot of the roadblocks for these super PACs to raise money and spend on whatever they want and very little restrictions on them, they can't be directly associated with campaigns, but they end up being loosely affiliated. And I think the real issue, the takeaway from this Iowa caucus on super PACs is super PACs were responsible for bringing down Newt Gingrich, because the super PACs and their funded negative commercials at Newt Gingrich that were funded by people who were supportive of the Romney campaign brought Newt Gingrich from first place to fourth in about a week. And it was a barrage of negative ads, and super PACs funded them, and they were responsible for them. And the Supreme Court decision that allowed this is responsible for this to happen. So one of the things that I think the Santorum campaign is already huddling about is another round of super PAC attacks funded by Romney supporters coming, and are the crosshairs now on him as to how he finished in the Iowa caucus?
What do you think, Wayne? Money?
Yeah, well, I think to the latter point, I think that's absolutely coming. And I think that the Santorum folks are very much trying to anticipate what that form that's going to take. We haven't seen very much of that yet in New Hampshire. My understanding from Iowa is that folks are getting, multiple calls per day, and maybe we can hear more about that, and the mailers that we usually get, but extremely negative. So I think that we have this issue of the super PAC out there. I think it's going to be a very interesting election as we go forward and see what role they play. But I think we should expect a very nasty campaign over the course of the next few months going into the summer.
And it's going to be hard to tell who's what, isn't it, Wayne? I mean, sometimes it's not really clear. They all have names like Stand for America and People for Freedom.
Sure, right. I Love Kitty Cats. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you should expect. But then the stuff that they're putting out there is really, really tough. Candidates have plausible deniability. Well, I'm not allowed to affiliate. I can't tell them to stop. These are some of the things that Romney was saying. But they're acting in your behalf. You could certainly say, knock it off, cut it out, And if a candidate were to say that, it would show some particular courage and a commitment to a clean process. But I think the other lesson is negative ads work.
Well, and Mitt Gingrich, excuse me, sure. They're all jumbling in my head. Jonathan Ahl, Newt Gingrich was pretty upset about these ads. He seems to feel that they brought him down. And tell us what he said in Iowa last night and how he may change his tactics once he hits the Granite State.
Well, and actually this started before last night. He said that he was going to take off the gloves and he was going to go at it. No more Mr. Nice Guy was essentially Newt Gingrich's call to arms here. And considering we're talking about Newt Gingrich, the idea that he said no more Mr. Nice Guy. Newt Gingrich has been an aggressive campaigner. When he was Speaker of the House, he never pulled a punch. So I'm trying to conceive of what that's going to sound or look like, Newt Gingrich taking off the kid gloves. But, what he specifically said last night was that he's not going to go negative, but he's not going to be afraid to tell the truth, which is code in political for I'm going to go negative.
Right.
And my understanding is that there's a pretty significant ad in
Union Leader,
the Concord paper this morning.
The Manchester Union Leader, yep.
A Manchester Union Leader that calls Mitt Romney timid specifically.
And it calls Gingrich a Reagan conservative,
right. Yes.
And Romney is a, what does it call him? A Massachusetts moderate, something along
right.
those lines.
Right. And it's in the newspaper that endorsed Newt Gingrich. And, mm-hmm. It's the only statewide, I think, newspaper in New Hampshire. So it's, it's definitely the beginning of a salvo, I'm guessing.
One more question, gentlemen, before we go to the calls. And again, I want to remind you, our number is 1-800-892-6477. Join us if you're planning to vote in the Republican primary. Will the results of these Iowa caucuses change who you vote for or not? 1-800-892-6477. Real quick to you, Jonathan. Some voters in Iowa were still undecided even going into the caucuses. And when I heard mm-hmm. that last night, I thought, wow, after all this.
I'm not surprised, though, because one of the things that hasn't happened in this caucus season in Iowa is there hasn't been that one candidate that could bring it all together. Let's look at 4 years ago, for example. Mike Huckabee did incredibly well. And the one thing that Mike Huckabee had 4 years ago that none of the candidates this time around had was that ability to own a room, to own the stump, to come in and say how he felt and what he was going to do. And even the people that might not like what he said still liked him. He had this likability factor. And I don't know that any of the candidates this time around had that. So the fact that nobody was that there was still this indecisiveness, that people were kind of trying on a lot of different candidates and seeing how they felt, didn't surprise me at all, because none of them really had that great gift of gab, that great ability to campaign. You know, we talk about the people who did the retail politics in Iowa. Santorum, obviously, number one. Ron Paul has a good ground game, but I still think that there was not as that polish and that ability to enter a diner or a house party or a Pizza Ranch restaurant and really connect with the people there the way that some people have in the past that were really successful in Iowa.
And Wayne, real quick to you on this undecided vote. Do we see the same amount of squishiness among the Republican electorate here?
Well, not just the Republicans, but we have an open primary. So we have a lot of independent voters that are going to participate. And that's for John Huntsman, right? The real goal is to try to lure those folks out in support of his campaign. And so we'll see. There's a lot of squishiness across the board here in New Hampshire.
Well, and John Huntsman hoping to be the Rick Santorum of New Hampshire, in other words, the surprise candidate.
Right, exactly.
Let's take some calls. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Norm is up first from Portsmouth. Hi, Norm, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I thought the results out in Iowa reconfirmed one really important point, and that is that this election is really about economic issues and that people are tired of Washington and folks in Washington. And it was not a surprise to me that Romney won it. I think he's the candidate. He's the guy that I'm going to be supporting here in New Hampshire. But it reinforced those issues. Lots of talk about social issues, all of that, and in the end, Romney took it. Happy with the result.
Yeah, Norm, can I ask you, though? It was close. I mean, the squeakiest of squeakers, right?
It was a big win in my mind for Mitt. With all the talk, and you look at the polls over the past few months, we saw all of it, you know, just a few days ago, was Ron Paul was going to take it by a big margin. So I think people sat down and thought, and they said, you know, this is really about economic issues, and he's the guy that can do it.
All right, Norm, thanks for calling in. Jonathan Aul, what do you think? Mitt Romney's success shows this election is all about the economy.
I certainly appreciate Norm's call, but I don't think he's correct, because if Michelle Bachmann or Rick Perry weren't in this race, Santorum wins by 5 points. So I think that saying that it was definitively about the economy and Mitt Romney owns the economic issues, I don't think that was accurate in Iowa. I think that jobs in the economy are still the biggest issue here, as they probably will be everywhere until the economy improves. But to say that it was exclusively that and that Mitt Romney is the sole proprietor of that issue, I don't know if that's I don't think that's something that's completely accurate, because if, you know, everyone says that Santorum was the social conservative and that that's what he was playing up, which is true to an extent. But for the people who have actually heard him on the stump, he talks about faith, family and freedom. And then he talks about economic policy. Now, what ends up getting reflected in the media reports is that he's the guy who's only running on social issues. That might be bigger in his campaign than it is with Mitt Romney, but it's certainly not the only thing he's talking about.
Interesting what you say, Jonathan and Wayne. I wonder what you think about this idea that, if you added in social conservatives like Bachmann and perhaps Perry to this vote that Santorum got, it would have been huge.
Right, and looking forward, with those two presumably out of the race, right, their supporters seem to be more naturally aligned with a Rick Santorum going forward than a Mitt Romney or some other candidates. There's still this question about that ceiling for Mitt Romney at around 25%. And so it remains to be seen how he gets past that down the road in places like South Carolina and in other states.
Do you think he needs to get past that, though? I mean, because if Gingrich hangs in And if Santorum is still there and Ron Paul is in, he can get 25% in the next four caucuses or primaries, win them all, and then be on the path to the nomination.
Right. And so as long as we have a crowded field, 25% is great. I mean, that's enough. I think if we see, if we anticipate others pulling out, if Huntsman does terribly in New Hampshire, if Gingrich pulls out after South Carolina, then you begin to see the field narrow. It may be too late at that point for an alternative to beat Mitt Romney. I would argue that at this point, it seems to me that Mitt Romney is in a fairly strong position to get the nomination. But these are the kinds of things we look at. If the field becomes less crowded, then he's got a tougher row to hoe.
Because Perry and Bachman, if they drop out, as is being projected today, mm-hmm. that helps candidates like Rick Santorum and
right.
Newt Gingrich.
Those folks are less likely to gravitate towards Mitt.
Let's take some more calls, gentlemen. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Norm, thanks for that one. And let's go next to Stephanie in Manchester. Stephanie, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I was just calling. You were talking about how the Iowa caucuses are affecting New Hampshire voters. For me, I represent, I think, a unique category of voters. I'm a young Republican female. And for me, I was really hoping to see more of a showing from Huntsman in Iowa. We didn't see really much of any of that. And now, like, I know personally who I'll vote for, but I really am interested to see how Huntsman will do here, and how that will carry him through the rest of the nation, because I think that a lot of New Hampshire voters would have loved to see Huntsman do well in Iowa as a sort of sign that, yes, it's okay, we should vote for him.
So not being validated by Iowa hurts Huntsman, you think, Stephanie?
I definitely do.
Even though he's the guy you support.
I think he's wonderful. I don't know that my vote will be cast for him, because I don't think that he has shown that he can be a strong candidate throughout the nation. But otherwise, as far as candidates I've met, I really have enjoyed Huntsman.
Interesting. So who are you going to pick instead of Huntsman?
I will be voting for Mitt Romney. I believe that he, out of all the candidates, he's the candidate that will carry us. Now, that having been said, there are a lot of other people I wish were running for president on the Republican ticket, but I don't think that a lot of those people I'd like to run are ready for it yet.
All right, Stephanie, good to hear from you. And Jonathan, I'll you first. Go ahead.
I think that Stephanie, people in Iowa would have loved to see John Huntsman.
But he didn't go there. He thought,
yeah,
it's too conservative. No one will vote for me.
Exactly. And I think to hear someone in New Hampshire say they would have liked to have seen John Huntsman do better, we would have liked to have seen him. and it's unfortunate that some presidential candidates still think that there's a strategy that is a winning strategy that has you skip early states, be it Iowa or New Hampshire or South Carolina. It doesn't matter, because I think that had John Huntsman at least shown up a little bit, it would have helped him quite a bit. And, you know, how would that have affected the final result? Hard to say. But, you know, when he's not here at all, the fact that he got any votes at all, a fraction of a percent, is still pretty amazing.
Yeah, this is a real interesting call, Wayne. She says she loves Huntsman, but because he didn't show any momentum coming out of Iowa, where he spent no time, she's going to switch to Romney.
This is the Huntsman campaign's worst nightmare call right here. I think Stephanie captures a very interesting story that's out there, and that there are voters who just their hearts are with a certain candidate, but their heads are with another candidate, and they're looking at and saying, you know, okay, I really like what this person stands for, but I don't think he can beat Barack or she can beat Barack Obama. I'm going to end up voting or supporting the person I think has the best chance of beating the president. And this happens every cycle, and it's part of the process. And Huntsman has bet the farm on New Hampshire. He just finished his 150th town hall, and he is crisscrossing across the state during the caucus and all this week. And so he's trying to make his closing argument, you know, and hoping that New Hampshire will propel him on and give him legs to go on to, you know, down the road to other primaries and caucuses. It's a tough path ahead for him, but he's bet it all on New Hampshire.
Well, does he have any campaign at all in South Carolina, Wayne?
I'm not aware of much of a presence there at all. I think he has some presence in Florida, very small. But I don't think there's much in South Carolina.
All right. Well, Stephanie, good to hear from you. And our number again, 1-800-892-6477. Thomas is in Somersworth. Hi, Thomas. You're on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Yes. Good morning. I just have a comment. I consider myself a homeless Republican. I have been homeless since 04. I'm a moderate. And the Iowa resorts demonstrated to me that there is no room for us in the Republican Party anymore. And I feel so devastated because I do believe that I have Republican ideas. I believe that the Republican Party has given so much to this nation. I'm a naturalized citizen. And I'm really, really disappointed.
So, Thomas, who might you go for in the primary on Tuesday, if I may ask?
Well, the only moderate left in that field is John Huntsman. But he's got no way, no chance of winning the nomination. So I will still be homeless. And I will be among a lot of people that will decide this election.
Well, Thomas, good to hear from you. And to you, Jonathan, you know, I think you and I discussed this a couple weeks ago. He says Iowa demonstrates there's no room for me in the Republican Party anymore. I think you said, no, there are Republicans in Iowa and elsewhere who remain moderate. What do you think?
Well, I think that's the case. And even among the people who are not moderate, you know, 60% of the people who went to the caucuses yesterday self-identified as born-again Christian or evangelical. But if you add up the percentages of the people who have that kind of background, it's not 60%. So there are people who I self-identify in Iowa as evangelical or born-again Christian who are still supporting people who are outside of just the social conservatives. So And I think that a lot of that ends up getting overplayed by the national media. I really do believe that when these candidates go out on the stump, they can talk for 25 minutes on foreign policy and economics and those kinds of things. And then they spend 5 minutes at the end talking about their faith and social issues. And then what ends up getting reported is, this is the candidate that's all about that. And I don't know that that's always reflective of the overall arc of everything that they stand behind. So I think that the fact that the Republican electorate seems to be a little more conservative is both a reflection that yes, there's more interest in a lot of more conservative candidates among the Republicans, but also that it is somewhat a creation of the media. That we like to polarize these candidates and try to make them as far apart as possible.
Wayne?
Yeah, and I think part of it is they are all trying to draw distinctions with one another. And for this cycle, it was who could be more conservative than, you know, X, Y, or Z. And so we saw a lot of that. I think John Huntsman began wanting to sort of represent that more moderate wing, but found that, you know, to play to the base, to get the base to turn out for him, he began to reemphasize, you know, a conservative record as governor of Utah. So I share the caller's concerns.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in, Thomas. And you can join us after a short break. I'm Laura Kanoy. Join me for live coverage of the New Hampshire presidential primary. We'll be up late tracking the returns with analysts in the studio, checking in with reporters at campaign headquarters around the state, and hearing the speeches from the candidates themselves. And of course, you can stay in touch with it all on our website throughout the night. Live coverage of the presidential primary begins Tuesday at 7 p.m. on NHPR and NHPR.org.
Primary night coverage sponsored in part by Altus Investment Group and Antioch University.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, from The Hop at Dartmouth, presenting De Thompson Ton this Saturday, January 7th at 8 p.m. Tickets at hop.dartmouth.edu. And from Rothwangel Dental Care in Bedford, comprehensive family and cosmetic dentistry devoted to restoring and enhancing the natural beauty of your smile. Information at rothwangeldentalcare.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, as the dust settles from the Iowa caucuses, we're looking at how this outcome might affect the New Hampshire primary next Tuesday. Join us with your comments and questions at 1-800-892-6477. If you're planning to vote in the Republican primary on Tuesday, let's hear from you. How might the Iowa caucus results affect your vote next Tuesday? And as the candidates spent a lot of time in the Granite State over the next 6 days, What do you want to hear them say that might attract you to vote for them? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. The email, exchange at nhpr.org. And Wayne Lesperon's Jonathan All, here's an email from Ray in Silver Lake. He says, in the New Hampshire debate, if Perry and Bachman drop out, it would be a good idea to recruit Buddy Romer and others who haven't been able to get in. They have important messages, particularly about campaign financing. Wayne, we've talked about Buddy Romer and Gary Johnson before. We've interviewed both of them here on The Exchange. A couple questions out of this email from Ray. First of all, have these gentlemen had an impact so far on the New Hampshire race? They spent a lot of time here, especially Buddy Romer.
It's hard to say. People go to Buddy Romer events and they always come away saying, gosh, what a great guy. I mean, how he's fun. He's challenging a lot of, you know, conventional wisdom. And then you ask them if they're going to vote for him, and I don't think he gets a chance to win. And so that's that's part of the challenge. So they're contributing in a way that we as New Hampshire voters like to go and see all the candidates, hear from them. I think probably the most amusing and fun way Buddy Romer contributes is whenever there's a public event, he is on Twitter, and he is one of the most hysterical Twitterers. I think I'm using the wrong word here. Out there.
Tweeters?
Yeah, sure. I'm a little behind. So that's the role. I think in terms of third parties, Gary Johnson, we know now, is moving over to Libertarian. But the real one that's out there that folks are concerned about is Ron Paul. You're noticed now that national Republican leaders are not going after Ron Paul about Iran in a big way. That happens by the other candidates, but not the leadership. There's a real fear that if Ron Paul bolts and runs as a third party candidate, that would be devastating to Republican chances in November.
Be the Ross Perot effect that we saw in the early 90s.
Exactly. And the other piece to it is, I don't know the exact numbers out of Iowa, but I'm hearing at least that Ron Paul is the only candidate that's bringing new voters, particularly young people, into the Republican Party. And that's another concern. If the Republican Party is going to be, you know, grow and be effective, it has to find a way to reach out to new voters. And Ron Paul has found that, at least for his campaign.
Yeah, Jonathan, your take on that from Iowa. Would Ron Paul's supporters like to see him run as a Libertarian?
Yes. I mean, the people who are supporting Ron Paul, at least in Iowa, from my experience, aren't people that are diehard Republicans that will automatically support the nominee because they support the party. They are people who support Ron Paul. So, yeah, I do think that if Ron Paul runs as a third party candidate, they will flock to him. How much will that pull votes off of the Republican nominee? Very difficult to say because, again, the exit polling that was done, that Ron Paul was by far the winner among first-time caucus goers. So to what extent was his support in Iowa from people who was their second choice? And my suspicion is that for a lot of those people, their second choice would be to not vote.
What do you think, Wayne?
No, I think that's right. So they would stay
home. That's pretty stark.
They would stay home. And that's why I say I think that potentially that is devastating to Republican chances. I suspect we're going to have a very close race in November. And this even a small percentage of folks either just stay home or don't select the Republican candidate and vote for a third-party candidate, that could be the difference very easily.
Again, if
the Republican nominee is very savvy, they will figure out a way to get enough pieces of the Ron Paul platform into their overall statement to coax a number of those people in. I don't know if it's possible, but someone who's really savvy will figure out a way to do that.
So along those lines, Jonathan, you're saying that savvy candidate can't be too critical of Congressman Paul because you risk alienating people. I'm wondering about that.
Well, definitely. And I think that and this is where if Mitt Romney is truly on a path to the nomination, this is where it's going to get a little hairy for him. I think it was very easy to allow the negative campaigning towards Newt Gingrich. But if he does the same thing towards Rick Santorum, is that going to disenfranchise evangelicals and social conservatives around the country? If he does that at Ron Paul, is it going to disenfranchise them? Newt Gingrich was easy to take down because his supporters were never as fundamentally behind him on principles as Santorum supporters are, or as Ron Paul supporters are. So when the super PAC gun gets loaded and it starts aiming at Santorum, I think, or if it ends up getting aimed at Ron Paul, I think Mitt Romney's got to be really careful, because it's not going to be as easy to do that without backlash as it was to do against Newt Gingrich.
It's two points on that, and I think that's exactly right. First, you know, Newt Gingrich did not really push back hard initially. He tried to sort of take on the "I'm going to be above the fray" approach, which worked miserably for him. Second, the more times this happens, super PACs go after different folks on behalf of Mitt Romney, the easier it becomes to really connect Romney to the super PAC and say, you know, this is what you are doing. This, you are responsible for these attacks. And perhaps there will be a backlash against that, against a candidate for those kinds of attacks. I don't know, though. I think the real danger is Ron Paul. There's already folks talking about we have to make sure he has a prominent place at the convention, you know, in ways of trying to manage him. The one thing about Ron Paul that I'm fairly confident saying is he's not easily managed. So we'll see. Republicans have a very dicey road ahead with him.
Let's take some more calls, gentlemen. And Mark joins us from Errol. Hi, Mark. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in today.
Yeah, good morning. I had a comment and a question. I'm a big supporter of Michelle Bachmann, and because I believe she's very smart and genuine. And I'm disappointed that it appears she's going to be dropping out. And I was wondering why you thought Rick Santorum surged ahead and not her.
And I'll ask Jonathan all that for sure, Mark. But could I ask you a question, please?
Sure.
So who do you go for now with the expected dropout of Ms. Bachmann?
Well, I guess I'm going to vote for Rick Santorum, but without all the enthusiasm.
Okay, great. Good to hear from you, Mark. What do you think, Jonathan?
I think that, you know, because remember, Michelle Bachmann won the straw poll. Not that that's the be-all, end-all, but it shows that she had organization and that she was able to resonate with some people. But I think the main thing that happened after the Ames straw poll was the incredibly large number of national debates, because I think Michelle Bachmann did not perform as well in those debates as the other people she was up against. And I think that among the other candidates, there were people who were much more seasoned, much more experienced in that kind of scenario. And I think that ultimately she just didn't do as well. And I think that as that progressed, people saw, well, her fundamental ideas may be there, but she doesn't quite have all those things that are presidential about her. And, you know, and then Rick Perry joined the fray after Michelle Bachmann won the Ames straw poll and competed for a lot of those same voters. And then eventually the shoe leather work that Rick Santorum came up with eventually overtook that. And, you know, you can't underestimate the value of tireless campaigning in Iowa or in New Hampshire. It's not going to automatically win it for you, but man, does it help.
Well, and looking at the results, Perry had 11% to Bachmann's 5%. So I hear your point, Jonathan. If Perry had never jumped in, those votes might have gone to Congresswoman Bachmann.
I think most of them would have.
Interesting. So what happens in New Hampshire then to these Michelle Bachmann voters?
Well, I think, you know, you hear it from Mark. I mean, there's not a whole lot of enthusiasm for anyone else, but they seem to have a natural connection to someone like Rick Santorum because of the issue of faith and family and those sorts of things. Michelle Bachmann's campaign, really, the other two pieces I'd add is that she did have a very strong debate performance here in New Hampshire very early on. In fact, she surprised a lot of folks and really rocketed up in terms of polls. And from that point and in the Ames straw poll point, it just began to decline. There was a very crowded field of folks with her particular niche. And I think the other thing is just before the caucus, there were a number of stories coming about real turmoil in her campaign. And so that may have affected some folks, too.
There's been some turmoil in the New Hampshire campaign, for sure. People quitting en masse.
Yeah, there hasn't been a Michelle Bachmann presence in New Hampshire in months, and because they all quit en masse.
Let's take Jeff in Portsmouth. Hi, Jeff, you're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. To come back to the question of Governor Buddy Romer, of Granny D and the work that she put into the issue of campaign finance reform, and really, we cannot address any of the major issues of the economy or education or energy until we address this issue. And Governor Romer has been here specifically talking about this issue and the fact that he does not take any more than $100 from any individual. And I wanted to get those folks on the show today to comment on now the fact that it appears some of the candidates will be dropping out. Do you believe, as I do, and I think a lot of New Hampshire voters do, that Governor Romer should be allowed on the stage on Saturday night with the rest of the candidates?
Okay, thanks a lot for calling in. Boy, Wayne and Jonathan, this is always a tough question. Sure. Who gets on that stage and who doesn't? Jonathan, just to you first, was there any talk or buzz about Buddy Romer in Iowa?
Not outside of a few diehard supporters.
Did he come to the stage? Did you talk to
him? No. Well, we tried. You know, and I forgive me if I've said this on the show before, but we invited Buddy Romer for an interview, and he turned us down. And then I mentioned that on the air, and one of his supporters called, was very angry, reported that information back to the national campaign. The national campaign called me and said, "You never invited us." I sent them back the email showing the invitation and their denial. So, you know, not
helps
only
to have email, did, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you know, so not only did he not come here, we invited him for an interview. He turned us down, and they forgot that we invited them, and they turned us down. So, it's with that I find it a little bit hard to be objective about the idea that there's this purity about Buddy Romer and he should be on the stage when he's ignoring what. And I think here's the issue: Buddy Romer isn't campaigning campaigning in New Hampshire and trying to campaign nationally. If he came to Iowa, I think he would have gotten a lot more traction and would have been a lot more appealing to get on the national stage. But when you decide that you're going to completely ignore the first state, hard to make the case that you're really in it.
Although Michelle Bachmann pretty much ignored New Hampshire, so there you go. On the other end of that.
And look how well that worked out for her.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about Buddy Romer. He's been a busy guy here in the Granite State for sure, Wayne. How do these news organizations who hold these debates make the decisions about who will get a podium and who will not? And do you expect to see Buddy Romer as our caller Jeff hopes?
I do not, because they do have these formulas that you know, in some cases they have candidates have to meet a certain percentage of in a national poll or in a state poll. If it is a practical consideration, if you actually go to the Secretary of State's website and look at the sample Republican primary ballot, there are dozens of candidates on that ballot. We're going to have a straw poll at our college convention here in a couple of days, and we printed up sample ballots, and there they all are. And I was showing them to my students, and they thought, my goodness, who are these people? Because we've heard about the eight folks or nine folks. If everyone should be able to debate, then, boy, these debates will look very different with 30 folks or so up there on the stage. So that's the challenge. If you want to see Buddy Romer today, you can. This is my shameless plug, Laura. At noon at College Convention at the Grapponi Center, Buddy Romer is going to have a town hall. It's open to the public. We'd love to have you come out and hear Buddy.
Yeah, it's not been hard to find Buddy Romer.
He is everywhere
here in the Granite State.
He has done the shoe leather campaign, and it is surprising to me he hasn't gotten a little more media attention. But he has one staffer in New Hampshire, and it's very tough without some organization.
Okay, and if you want to listen to our interview with Buddy Romer, you can go to our archives exchange at nhpr.org. You know, gentlemen, we've talked a lot about all these different candidates. We haven't focused, though, Jonathan, too much on Rick Perry, who made a huge, and I mean huge, splash in Iowa and New Hampshire when he first got in. What happened?
Well, I think that it was the... I think what was appealing about Rick Perry was how he looked on paper. You know, here's a guy who's a governor for a long time, had a history of job creation, evangelical credibility, and a great head of hair. And you think this guy is going to be a real player. And then he got into the race and, you know, some gaffes in some national debates, not quite as powerful on the stump. And the other thing that Ben Philpott from KUT, the public radio station in Austin, we had him on, and he had a great insight into him, covering him for all those years in Texas. Rick Perry never really had to campaign very hard in Texas. Is that the Democratic Party has been so weak in Texas that he has never really been up against tough competition before. So I think that when he got to Iowa and it looked like he was going to be the front runner before he even stepped foot in the state, it was very exciting for him, and he looked great on paper. But then he got here and realized the amount of work that was involved and how there were a lot of other people who were good at campaigning, who were going for the same thing that he was. And in terms of being able to campaign, he was kind of out of his league.
I think when the storylines about a candidate are that he looks sleepy on a debate stage, or that he, you know, the oops moment where he forgot the, you know, the cabinet or the agencies he wanted to cut, when that becomes the narrative, you're in real trouble. And you know, there are a lot of process stories that came out. Politico did some real, really tough stories on the state of his campaign. Our own local Dave Carney took a number of hits from Politico. You know, that the campaign wasn't organized well, that they weren't getting it done. I don't know that that is completely fair. I think there was a lot more to it with the candidate than it was the campaign. But at the end of the day, it was very high expectations. He came in after the Ames straw poll and vaulted to the very top of the polls. I remember seeing him at one of his first events at Politics and Eggs and, you know, thinking, wow, there's a lot of energy here. And boom, unrealized, unmet, and debate performance after debate performance. I mean, the lines about, you know, he's good in the first hour, but that's it. He's not able to continue. There's just not no stamina. It's those are not the kinds of stories you'll recover from very easily.
Well, and Jonathan Aull, so good of you to join us a couple times over the course of this nomination campaign, and I really appreciate your time, given how little sleep you got last night. Final thoughts, Jonathan, from you on lessons from Iowa as this campaign progresses.
I'm a little biased because I like the Iowa caucuses.
Sure.
But I think that what it shows is three people, you know, 75% of Republicans in Iowa went almost evenly for three people with very different platforms, ideologies, and campaign strategies. If that doesn't bolster how great a small state like Iowa or New Hampshire can be in the early part of this nomination, I don't know what does.
Well, and Jonathan, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
And Wayne Lesperance, shameless plug time.
Sure.
What are you going to be doing over the next couple weeks here in New Hampshire and at New England College?
For the next few days at the Groponi Center at Concord, we have college convention. We will have Santorum. We will have Paul. We will have Buddy Romer. We will have lots of presidential candidates come by and check them out.
So anybody can come.
Come on in.
All right. Good to see you, Wayne. Thank you very much.
You too. Thank you, Laura.
That's Wayne Lesperance, professor of political science at New England College, director of the Center for Civic Engagement. Of course, our coverage will be ongoing of this primary campaign. And on Tuesday, we'll have a one-hour pregame show, 2 hours of coverage from me and Ken Rudin and others. And then Brady Carlson will take over later at 11 o'clock to look ahead after the New Hampshire primary. So be sure to join us for that. This is The Exchange on NHPR. We'll